I have a son that's in his 40s, and he's been he would eat some greasy things, or even pecan pie. That's kind of weird. And he would have extreme pain for 2 to 12 hours. And
where was the pain?
In the middle of his stomach.
Gotcha.
In his gut. And he's gone to some regular doctors, and they don't really, you know, he takes antacids, but nothing seems to help. And I thought, well, this is a good question for you. You're a sharp guy.
Well, I can give you my best guess. He's having a gallbladder attack.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could be wrong. Let me just cover the bases with you.
I didn't mean that.
If you were to go from the lower part of the rib cage down to the belly button or the navel, if the main bulk of his pain is between the belly button and the rib cage, then it's almost always a gallbladder problem.
Okay.
From what you're describing.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So I'm trying to think of a study that I read back from the 1960s. There was a doctor, and for some reason I want to call him Dr. Kaufman. Maybe it's William Kaufman, not Doug Kaufman, Dr. William Kaufman. But if I'm not mistaken, he was in charge of this wing of a hospital that dealt with gastrointestinal problems. And they had, back in the day, they had a habit of hospitalizing people that had very, very severe gallbladder attacks. We're talking about pain so severe that you're tempted to say, maybe I should go to the emergency room now because something bad's going to happen. But these people he would take in, the first order of business was he would have them fast for 3 days. You know what? The way I look at it is that's pretty cheap, and that's pretty easy, and, you know, it doesn't cost a lot, and it's non-toxic. There's no chance of death from fasting. You just drink all the water and fluids you want. You can drink herbal teas.
Right.
But he had such a tremendous high success rate in treating these gallbladder attacks and gallbladder problems just with fasting. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
So the fasting will maybe take it away, the whole thing, if it will not happen again, or does it possible? I'm sure.
Yes and no, or no and yes. But here's what he discovered. He discovered that he would attempt to reintroduce foods to these people to see if any of the foods that they were eating commonly would trigger another one of these very severe attacks like you're describing with your 40-year-old son.
Okay.
And so the safest foods of all time, if he gave him cherries or peaches or apricots or apples, he never had any triggering of these severe pain. But I can tell you what the top foods were.
Okay.
And then I'll try to flesh out and explain why I think that is. I mean, the report doesn't explain it, but I have my own ideas on it. And I'm sort of joking when I say this, but not really, because you're going to say, okay, yeah, that would do it. If he gave him a can of Wolf Brand chili with onion rings, that would most assuredly flare it up one more time. And so there are two or three things that can do this. And see, I don't want to come across this morning and try to suggest to you that fat is bad for you. But if you have a very inflamed bile duct, or common bile duct, or pancreatic duct, or your entire, what I would call the biliary tree with all your bile ducts in your liver, there's like 50,000 of them probably, and your liver and your gallbladder. But if that, see, what happens is your liver and your gallbladder, let me go to the liver first. Your liver is literally a muscle. If it, when it contracts, it squeezes and it pushes bile from it and the gallbladder into the intestines, and that's normal. That's what you're supposed to have. I mean, how many times have you been to the donut shop at 4:30 in the morning and all the old men say, if I don't drink my coffee in the morning, I won't have a bowel movement, because coffee's been shown to make the liver contract a little bit. That's one of the reasons why when people that have hepatitis C drink a cup of coffee a day, their risk of cancer is cut in half over 20 years, and that's a pretty big deal, because coffee, believe it or not, can help some people purge toxins from their liver and cause bile to move in the intestines, which causes a good bowel or bile flow, which causes bowel movements. But anyway, the point I'm getting to is, if your son's gallbladder is already got a hair trigger, meaning it's inflamed and it's irritated, if he eats something that's like pepperoni pizza and onion rings and a can of Wolf Brand chili, I mean, buddy, he is asking for it big time.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make it contract all the harsher. And if you ever had a jammed finger before?
Yeah.
Did you like it when somebody walked up to you and said, hey, let me squeeze that swollen purple knuckle for you? No, it hurts. And so you try to limit how much, bending. It won't bend very far. But if your son's gallbladder is already inflamed, it's just more of a function. He's eating foods that are high in fat that are making that liver and gallbladder contract all the more. And when they're swollen, it just hurts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand.
The top foods that always trigger gallbladder attacks are going to be eggs, onions, and pork. Those are the top ones of all time.
Oh, okay.
And so I find... are you kind of with me on that? Eggs are high in fat, bacon's high in fat. The onion part, there are studies that show if the onions are cooked, there's much less of a reaction. I'm not sure what the math is on that. I just know that if your son says, hey, Dad, let's go get onion rings right now, well, he's asking for something to happen.
Okay. Hmm.
And so if he can identify what it was, and that's what Dr. Kaufman found in that hospital study, that if all he did was just identify what was the food that would trigger this horrible gallbladder attack, then bingo.
Huh.
It would
go away.
I
thought it would be more greasy, but I don't...
Well, onion rings are greasy, probably.
Well, it's the fat involved in it.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. And that's the other topic that I didn't cover. And you'll have to forgive me. Back in 1962, when the study was done, I don't really know that they so heavily promoted all the greasy vegetable oils like they do now.
Sure.
You know, in 2022, from 1962, that'll be what, 60 years removed, which we're 4 years away from 2022, Lord willing.
Our foods are a lot different.
Oh, yeah, and that's exactly right. And the foods that we have today, they probably have a lot more vegetable oil, which is probably rancid. I just think those are hard on the gallbladder and the liver, if you ask me.
Sure. Okay.
This whole idea of avoiding animal products because they contain cholesterol, all you're doing is it's a recipe for liver and gallbladder failure at some point. And you know what? We probably have the world record right now currently for the highest amount of fatty livers. Now, tell me, what does your son look like? Is he like a long, lean... Is he 6'3", 195 pounds, of solid muscle like a commando?
He's more like 6 foot and is not over. I don't know how to describe him more. 6 foot and he's just normal.
Does he have kind of like an athletic frame?
Close.
Okay. Well, that was a very good answer on your part, because he's probably listening right now, isn't he?
No, I hope he's not.
Okay, he's still in bed. He's recovering from the Wolf Brand chili and the onion rings and the fatty foods. No, I'm joking. So what we have to do is we have to come up with a way. And can I give you like two or three ideas?
Yes, please.
All right. These are some of my favorites. Just because they're my favorites doesn't make them your favorites or your son's favorites. But I'm a huge fan of, this week I was walking through Walmart. And there was one woman, and I couldn't even tell you what she looked like, but in her shopping cart, she was loading beets into her shopping cart. You know how they come attached with those beet tops or the greens, and there's like a small bee at the bottom? Well, right. If your son were to take a blender and just cut the beet off, and I don't know. I don't spend a lot of time washing beets. I might like scrub the major chunks of dirt off of them, but I figure a little dirt's probably good for you. And, you know, beets are so earthy to begin with. You eat them sometimes, and people say, tastes like I'm eating dirt. I'm going, well, they're pretty earthy, all right. But if you took one beet and your son put it in a blender, one that has some power to it or has some pretty good blades on it, if you were to add a couple of cups of that raw, unfiltered apple juice and then the juice of one lemon to that concoction, along with a tablespoon of olive oil, you just try to pulverize that beet into nothingness. It probably will sound like a handful of ball bearings in the blender. So you probably don't want to do this first thing in the morning, because your wife might...
Wake up, everybody.
Oh, my goodness. It'd be like the worst sound of all time. It's like gravel, in a glass jar. It sounds horrible. But if he can pulverize that, that may be the easiest format for him to drink that first thing in the morning once a day. And apple juice, when I say apple juice, have you seen what I'm talking about? Like if you go to, a health food store and you see these gallon jugs, it looks like rusty water.
Right.
Yeah, that's unfiltered apple juice. That's it. Well, see, apples, they contain an enzyme called pectinase. And pectinase is very good at helping to dissolve all that debris in the liver and the gallbladder, gently.
When I was in college, I would have apple juice in the morning at breakfast and not remember, and all of a sudden get a lot of pain and run to the room because it was just too much acid, I thought, but I didn't know.
Well, and there may be something to that, but you're talking about apple juice that has it's kind of clear liquid gold, right?
Oh, I see. So you have to get the natural.
Well, I'm not being completely forthcoming with you. I hate to admit this, but I have seen results just from, you know, plain Jane apple juice that's been filtered that looks like liquid gold.
Okay.
But my preference, and you know, this is a debate, so I don't care if you argue with me about it or anybody else does, but just I like that rusty water.
Okay.
So if he did that once a day, yes, there's always the possibility that he could have to run to the bathroom.
For sure.
But for all I know, he's cleaning out old congealed bile that's clogging up in his liver and is in his gallbladder. And so
sure.
It's almost like I gave you Roy's formulation for soap for the gallbladder.
Okay.
Hey, that's a good idea. Dr. Roy's gallbladder soap. Hang on, I got to write this down. This is going to be a $1 million seller for me. No, go ahead.
Also, I don't want to take this too long, but you said that coffee helps, and I don't like coffee. And so what else besides when you were talking about coffee helps clear it out and stop cancer, what other... Besides coffee, what should you
have? The one thing, and of course, no one ever tells me what to talk about, or they don't demand that I talk about, you know, hemorrhoids on the radio. So I get to choose my own topic. And this morning,
not a favorite.
Really?
Not a favorite.
I thought you said it's my favorite.
No.
Okay, I heard that wrong. So this morning, I became very, very intrigued reading about SEACT. Have you ever heard of SEACT?
No.
Let me spell it for you. E-S-S-I-A-C, and I think that's Casey spelled backwards.
Okay.
So if you knew of a woman or a little girl named Casey and it was spelled C-A-I-S-S-E, that's her name spelled backward, SEACT.
Okay.
And what I'll do is, if I can, let me read that to you because it's very intriguing to me, and I had fun reading it, so... After you get off the phone, I'll take off and I'll run with that topic, and that'll kind of answer this last question you have, all right?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Enjoy your program a bunch.
Thanks. I really appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Good morning. Bye-bye.
Okay. This program is called Health Essentials, so let's focus on health. Here we go. And I do not know who the author of this is. I do, too. It's Scott Miners. Sorry. I didn't look. Okay, if you will, I'm not asking you to form a rock-solid opinion based on what I'm about to read to you. All I want you to do is I want you to consider it. And if you don't need to consider this now, maybe it will be useful to you tomorrow, or 2 years from now, or maybe 10 years from now you'll remember, oh yeah, I remember Dr. Morgan, you know, at KBGS 90.3 FM, our favorite radio station, I remember him talking about this, so... Here goes. In the year 1922, there was a nurse named Renee Casey, and that is spelled C-A-I-S-S-E, or maybe it's Cassie, sorry. She worked in the surgery ward in an Ontario hospital where she found an elderly woman patient with a very strangely scarred breast. The woman explained to Nurse Casey that 30 years earlier, doctors told her that she had advanced breast cancer and she would need to have the breast removed. She declined the surgery. A Native American friend in Ontario had offered to heal it with herbal medicine, and she decided to accept. The man who was an Ojibwe, I hope I'm saying that right, Ojibwe herbalist, he gave her the herbal recipe and he showed her how to make it, or make a brew out of it. She drank the tea daily. Her tumors shrank and then disappeared. I kind of wonder within myself how many physicians would find this completely horrible, horrible information that tumors can shrink and then disappear on their own without any chemotherapy. Anyway, sorry. So her tumors shrank and then disappeared. Have I got your attention? This has mine. She was still totally cancer-free over 30 years later as she spoke with Nurse Casey in the Ontario Hospital. Casey obtained the recipe for herself, thinking she could use it if she ever had cancer. It turned out that shortly afterward, Casey's aunt was diagnosed with advanced stomach cancer and was given 6 months to live. Folks, I don't know if you know anything about stomach cancer, but it usually doesn't have a very good outcome. It's kind of like pancreatic cancer. Casey asked her aunt's physician, who was R.O. Fisher, M.D., for permission to try the tea. He consented. Her aunt drank the herbal brew daily for over 2 months and then recovered. I just think that's phenomenal. If you ask me if I believe that, yes, I do. I do believe that. Do you believe that? Well, if you don't, it's okay. She lived for 20 more cancer-free years. That was Casey's aunt that had stomach cancer. She was given 6 months to live. Dr. R.O. Fisher and Casey then began treating cancer patients whose physicians had diagnosed them as terminal. You know what that means? That means you're a goner in a short period of time. And many of them improved dramatically. Casey and Fisher modified the combination of the herbs, and Casey named the concoction Essiac, which is her name spelled backwards. Through the years, Casey treated thousands of cases. The vast majority came to her for treatment after surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy had failed, and the patient's physicians had pronounced them incurable. One example is Annie Bonner. That's B-O-N-A-R. She was diagnosed with uterine and bowel cancer, which had spread after radium treatments, and her arm had swelled to double its size, turning black. Oh, my word, that does not sound good. The night before the arm was to be amputated, oh my goodness, she opted for Essiac therapy instead. That's the tea that we're talking about. During 4 months of the herbal treatment, she went from 90 pounds. Folks, if you're a woman and you weigh 90 pounds and you're of normal height, that is not a good weight. She went from 90 pounds to 150 and her arm returned to normal. Now that's what I call healing. A series of exams revealed that she was cancer-free. The Royal Cancer Commission of Canada listed her case as recovery due to radiation. Anyway, I'll let you decide for yourself. Now, let me see. Okay. This will be our theme for the day, even though I had about seven other things I thought I'd talk about. But since the guy asked me the question, we've got to take it and run with it, right? Okay, this comes from the Essiac report by Richard Thomas. Let's go to the phones first, then we'll come back to this. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Dr. Morgan, we have a little problem that we're trying to figure out with my daughter. When she was growing up, going through puberty, she didn't have a regular cycle, and she was on a bad diet. And now she's 20. They put her on birth control to try to get that cycle going, and we're trying to get her off of that. So would you have any recommendations for that?
Can I ask you just a couple of questions, please?
Yes, sir.
Well, actually, let me make a statement first. I'm not saying that you or I have to completely understand the math on this and how it works. We're just going to say it's normal, but it takes the moon exactly 28 days to make a complete circuit in its orbit around the Earth. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
So, like, if we have a month where there's two full moons, like, say there's a full moon on the 1st of May, and 28 days later there's another one, they call that a blue moon, right?
Right.
So, even though I cannot fathom or understand the hormonal influence of the moon making a circuit around the Earth, let's just say it's normal, and that's the way it is. And so her menstrual cycle, your beautiful 20-year-old daughter, is supposed to be on a 28-day cycle. That's a normal rhythm, just like God has set all the planets in motion. No, I do not know what the orbit of Jupiter is around the sun. I'm guessing it's a little bit longer than one Earth year because it's so farther away. But it takes the moon exactly 28 days, and so what should be normal for your daughter is every 28 days she starts her cycle. Can we agree on that?
Yes, sir, and they told us that it was PCS.
PCOS.
PCOS.
Sorry, yeah. I'm not trying to correct you, but it's called polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yes, sir.
And see, to me, that's just really, really helpful to understand. But let's go back just for a second. So all I'm suggesting is the very thing that you're expressing to me about your daughter. She's just out of the normal sync and rhythm of the moon going around the Earth. She's not on a normal rhythm, right?
Right.
And so what we want to do is we want to bring her back into a normal rhythm or a normal cycle.
Right.
And so if I don't cover these topics in order, it doesn't matter. We're still getting to the same result. But if a young girl has had a diagnosis of PCOS, there's several things that we can do to try to get this back into submission. And so I've got a sales pitch for you. There is a master control hormone in the body called insulin. Have you ever heard of insulin?
Yes, sir.
And if insulin levels are too high, that's going to totally screw up her female hormone balance, or she's more prone to getting that messed up and out of whack. And so the only way to really do this is by lowering insulin. And so, I can give you simple answers, but that maybe it's probably going to end up being a deeper conversation, but I want you to grasp this. I'm going to assume right now that her insulin levels are just way too high. And when they're too high, it's not going to help if she, eats foods that are high in starches and carbohydrates and sugars. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And so there are just a million dietary therapies today, but I'm kind of a fan of the paleo diet. And there's plenty of times that I love what happens to a young woman when they start eating a ketogenic diet. But to make a long story short, if we can compel or convince your daughter to start eating lots of vegetables and real meat that God has made, we're going to see a drastic change in her body. Number one, we're going to flood her body with nutrients that she's probably just not getting. But see, that's what I was tempted to talk about, the role of zinc with PCOS. You've got to have zinc to potentiate insulin and to keep blood sugar in balance. And so what I would suggest to her, if she has all these cysts forming all over the one ovary or the other or both, she's probably got a classic zinc deficiency. And, of course, I'm not trying to make a joke by saying this, but when someone is low in zinc, oh, do they crave sugar. They want it. It calls their name.
Okay.
If there's a church fellowship dinner and there's like one table filled with salads, I know that doesn't happen. I'm just joking as I say that. But, if there was a table of salads, that would be the table that everyone avoids, and they go after the fried chicken and the biscuits and stuff like that and the dessert. Have you ever seen people go to the dessert aisle first and get the desserts and then come back and try to get food?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Well, when you're low in zinc, you can't help yourself. You crave sugar. And if a cyst is forming the ovaries, I'm going to guess that she's very deficient in zinc and also the element called iodine. Have you ever heard of iodine before?
Oh, yeah. It's rich in seafoods.
Oh, you betcha, man. And look, can I ask you a personal question? Because you could turn around and ask me, do you ever feel better after you eat seafood?
Oh, yeah.
I do, too. I always feel good. Last Saturday, I went to eat some, it was just called whitefish. You ever heard of whitefish?
Oh, yeah.
It's just I tell you what, I feel like $1 million. Feel good. And so you get that when you eat seafood. You get the rich element iodine, which is one of the reasons why one of the greatest superfoods of all time to help people improve their health is kelp or seaweed, because it's rich in those minerals that come from the sea like iodine. But personally, I don't ever see cysts go away without iodine. I just don't.
Okay.
There is an herb called chaste tree, and I believe that's spelled C-H-A-S-T-E. And that could be of a very great value to your daughter in trying to help regulate her hormonal cycle. Another one that I like very much is called white peony. I think it's a flower.
Okay.
I don't think it's a poppy that comes from Afghanistan, though. I think it's one that grows here in America. But white peony, I think that's P-E-O-N-Y, I think.
Okay.
If I did not pronounce that right, you can forgive me, right?
No problem. But, I can Google it. That's fine.
Good. Thank you. And these will have a very powerful regulating hormonal effect on her ovaries. And so she has a gland in her body called the pituitary gland. The pituitary produces two hormones that I'm interested in. One of them is called follicular stimulating hormone, and the other one's called luteinizing hormone. And luteinizing hormone, which has everything to do with how she ovulates and how she produces progesterone, it ain't working right now. It's not. And you got to have zinc to make that one work. Her problem is she has too much insulin, too much estrogen. And with too much estrogen, she's probably going to be, is she the least bit prone to having acne or blemishes or red bumps come up on her body?
Not really, but her skin is sensitive to where it'll turn red when you...
Oh, yeah. So, like, if you had heavy whiskers, you don't want to rub your whiskers on her face, or she'll say, Dad, don't do that. It makes my face red.
That's right.
Does she... Oh, well, I probably shouldn't ask this question, but I am. Does she have any... one of the hallmarks also of PCOS is you get this hormone imbalance going on, and before you know it, you're growing some dark hairs in places where you shouldn't. So, like in women, they may have to pluck hairs from the chest area and maybe from their neck or their chin. And, yes, it's true. I've seen women that have had full beards and mustaches all because of this, because if it goes unchecked, it will eventually develop into facial hair growth, which probably not real attractive to have a beard on a woman. But on a man, just fine.
Right.
And so the way to turn this around, if she is not used to exercising at all, if she can wrap her mind around the idea that if she goes for a 30 to 45 minute walk every day, or she does CrossFit or something, well, maybe not CrossFit, but if she does something where she purposely tries to be a good steward of the body that she's been given, exercise always improves the insulin receptor sensitivity, which is what she needs right now.
Okay.
Does she like exercise?
Not really.
But if she can start wrapping her mind around it, and all of a sudden she says, you know what? If this is going to happen, it's going to be completely up to God's will, and it's going to be up to me to do my role. God does his part, I'll do my part. But if she starts exercising, she'll start turning this around. But I bet you anything, she is beautiful, isn't she?
Oh, yeah, she is.
Do you own a shotgun to keep boys away from her?
You're right. I got it at all the doors.
You know what? I like you more and more. Now, do you keep it loaded just in case somebody shows up unannounced?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. You're a good guy. But this is just going to have to be tackled piece by piece. But if we don't overcome the insulin resistance that she has right now, we'll never get the estrogen levels to drop and get her progesterone up. So
you've hit all the targets. I wanted to ask you one thing on the sugar.
Yeah.
If we use natural honey, I guess, would that...
Well, tell me how much honey you're wanting to use. If you said she really loves a teaspoon of honey and a morning cup of tea or something like that, I don't worry about stuff like that.
Okay. That's fine. That's good then.
But you know what? I have seen these things turn around so fast it just floored me at how well a person did. But it's going to be a combination of eating right, just kind of like you suggested to begin with. And daily exercise. I wish I could tell you there's a pill that you could take to take the place of exercise. That doesn't exist. And so she can turn all this around, but it may require some nutrient supplementation to help correct these deficiencies and weaknesses that she has.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and give her zinc too?
Yeah, and I would give her some iodine. Of course, one of the classic ways to give iodine is just to give a woman kelp.
Okay.
You know, what they used to use in their starter when they made all breads and risen products back prior to 1951, they always used iodine, but now they switched to the other halogen called bromide, and that just totally screws up a female's hormones. And so all these, I'm not trying to say wheat's bad, but if she goes to the donut shop, that stuff is just full of bromide, and it takes its toll on a woman's body.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance that your wife has had any hormone issues and the daughter's just kind of like an apple falling from the mama tree and having similar issues?
No, she hadn't.
Okay. You know who I want to blame right now for this? The grandparents. I'm joking, but when I say that.
I really think it was her diet when she was young. You know, she did like carbs. So you was right when she
was
young. Well,
that's why I was trying to blame the grandparents, because when she would spend the weekend with them, they would load her up with carbs, and you'd... I'm only joking. Anyway, but this can all be turned around. It can be reversed. To me, I don't see this as a big deal at all. But the number one thing that you got to have is you got to have the right attitude, which sometimes my attitude's not so good. And if I say, all right, I will submit to that and do it, that's when things start going well. But if she can learn, oh, my word, she can turn all this around and she can be more beautiful than ever, and all the redness and inflammation will leave her skin. And then you will have to buy an extra shotgun to protect the back door from boys knocking on the back door and the front door simultaneously.
All right.
Thank you very much for your phone call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, let me read this to you right here. Or let me give the phone number just in case. It's always so much more important talking with you and trying to help you and encourage you than it is for me to read information on the phone or the radio. The number here is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. I just went to the doctor this week, and I've got some severe arthritis going on, and he wants to put me on Humira, and I just don't want to own that. I had 6 months of chemo with breast cancer, and I just think it's kind of like the same thing.
I don't blame you at all.
So what do you suggest I do?
Well, where's the arthritis?
Well, I have rheumatoid. It's in my bones. My big toe is swollen, and the underneath my foot is numb, but I have Crohn's, too. So
oh boy.
He said it'll work hand in hand with both of those.
Okay. Well, I mean, he does have a point there, because what the Humira does, it blocks what's called tumor necrosis factor alpha. Have you ever heard that term before?
No, sir.
Did I impress you by saying it? No, I'm joking. No, every white blood cell in your within the immune system, it carries around this protein called tumor necrosis factor alpha. And the easiest example that I could give is, if you were to catch the flu, God forbid you would have the flu, but if you did, I guarantee in your case, all the pain would go to your big toe and your foot, or wherever the joints were previously swollen. Isn't that a lovely thought, that a virus knows exactly which tissue to attack every single time?
Yeah.
So if a person's really prone to severe low back pain, if you get the flu, guess what? Your low back is going to flare up big time. That's because these white blood cells are releasing too much tumor necrosis factor alpha in response to the flu. But let me give you two different takes on this. It's been proven over and over and over again that if you want to have higher levels of tumor necrosis factor alpha, and that's what you see with, did you say Crohn's and rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Those are two very well-established autoimmune diseases, and all I mean is your immune system starts attacking you, and that ain't a good plan. That's autoimmunity right there. And so we're trying to put a stop to that. And so it's been well established, an infection can definitely trigger an autoimmune reaction. And you don't know this, but this morning I was reading a piece by Dr. Leo Galland. He's a medical doctor. He's actually quite famous.
Mm-hmm.
He's written several books, and I like reading. But he was making the comment, a lot of the people that he sees that have allergies or allergic reactions, and so let me just define an allergy as your immune system overreacts to pollen. So let me see. Yesterday morning, I walked outside, and I looked on the windshield of my pickup, and guess what I saw? Yellow dust everywhere. It was all over it.
Really?
It was over the hood. Yeah, and if I believe my wind is cracked while I'm, you know, in the office working with patients, I could come out and the dash will be covered with yellow dust. If it's cracked 1 inch, the dust goes in and it ends up on the dash and everywhere else. I probably look like I'm yellow right now, just covered in, well, the rain probably took it away. But if your immune system really overreacts and goes overboard, you might be miserable. I mean, haven't you heard of people just being in sheer misery with an allergy? their eyes, their ears, their throat, their nose, their lungs, their tummy, their skin, their itching. It just drives them nuts. But that's the immune system is not responding in the appropriate way. It's overkill. And that's kind of like what autoimmunity is. And so Dr. Gallon, in this article, he was saying, and I know this is a little bit of a stretch, but just kind of play with me right here. But he says one of the top findings that he uncovers over and over again when people have autoimmunity and they have severe allergies where the immune system has just gone bonkers and is attacking the wrong thing, he says he'll find an overgrowth of a type of a bacteria called staph. You ever heard of a staph infection?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever had a family member have a staph infection?
Yes, sir.
It ain't good, is it?
Yes, sir.
I don't think there's anything good about having a staph infection. But, see, I think that's interesting because Dr. Gallon is saying one of the ways of getting rid of autoimmunity and all these allergies is trying to get rid of the staph. And so you've heard of taking probiotics?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever taken them?
No, sir.
That's my sales pitch to you today. Take them. Because your fortunes are going to literally rise and fall based on the number of beneficial bacteria. And so, you know how, have you seen the picture of Lady Liberty or the Lady of Justice? She's holding the scales and she's blindfolded and she doesn't know what the truth is and she's going to find out who's guilty and who's innocent.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work that way. Everybody, if you go to court, you're guilty no matter what. Anyway, but the purpose of taking beneficial microbes or probiotics, like in a supplemental form, and you know, for thousands of years, people have had fermented sourdough breads to eat full of probiotics. They've consumed wine, which can be full of probiotics, sauerkraut, cheese, you know, sour cream, kombucha, fermented beverages, maybe even beer. I don't do that stuff, but some people do. And they're getting these beneficial microbes. And when you have enough good bacteria living inside of your gut, then your body becomes a happy place to live. And plus, if you have a bunch of good guys, there's not much room for bad guys, like what Dr. Leo Gallon was talking about with an overgrowth of staph in the body. And that's one of the reasons, like, the man that I called, or, I'm sorry, I didn't call him, he called me. He was talking about his 20-year-old daughter that has PCOS and female hormone imbalances. If we can only get rid of all the toxic germs that are living inside of us, our bodies will become a pretty happy, quiet place to live. It's like pure love. You can say, I love, love, love my gut. But when you have Crohn's disease, you will not say, I love, love, love my gut or the joint. But if you look up studies on rheumatoid arthritis, it's always associated with an overgrowth of toxic bacteria. One of the bacteria, the toxic bugs that have been associated with rheumatoid, is called Proteus mirabilis. And, of course, I like to rephrase that and call it Proteus makes me miserable. So that's probably the way I can... So you have an overgrowth. And when they take in the aspirate or suck the fluid out of these inflamed joints, they almost always find fragments of toxic bacteria in there, so your immune system trying to attack that. So the cleaner your bowels become... I tell you what, I can't believe no doctor has ever told you to take probiotics. I cannot believe that.
No. My boss did it one time. She always tried to get me to take them.
I had a woman that came to see me recently with just a real severe diverticulitis. You ever heard of diverticulitis?
Yes, sir.
I mean, the woman is doubled over in pain. Just one dose. I mean, the dose was 200 billion bacteria per capsule, which is a mega dose. The pain went away instantly. I couldn't have asked for a better result. Usually I look at people in public and that causes them to have diverticulitis. Not really. But I gave her just one probiotic and it totally knocked it out. It changed it. She said, what'd you give me? I said, I gave you probiotics. And I was kind of in of course, I act that way all the time. If somebody gets a good result, I go, I had no idea this would work. I just was guessing. I didn't. But, yeah, that's one thing that I would really consider with you is if you have both Crohn's disease and rheumatoid. The other
does
thing.
Does it come in a pill? It comes
oh,
in a
yeah.
Pill form?
Yes, it does. And it's like so easy to purchase. You could, I mean, if you want to get like a small dose, you can go to any store and get that, baby. If you want to go to a health.
My boss and them trying to get me to drink that stuff, and I can't. I don't like that.
Would you quit being resistant and difficult to these great ideas that your boss has?
I know.
There's a reason why your boss is your boss. But if you start taking probiotics, Now, you will, and I'm not going to tell you, in one day you will be brand new. It's going to take time because you've suffered with this for a long time, haven't you?
Well, I've had arthritis since I was 18.
Well, then we need to give this, like, just a few months to kind of turn it around. But if you start taking, if you faithfully take probiotics every day, this is what I would aim for. If you go into the store and say, I don't know anything about anything about anything, where are the probiotics? Which one would you recommend? But the ones that I look for are usually multiple strains, like 10 to 12 to 14 to 16 different individual bacteria, but you're trying to get numbers. You want numbers of good microbes. And so if it says there are 25 billion bacteria per capsule, that's a good number. I did say billion with a B.
Okay.
Think about your bank account. You have billions of dollars in your bank, right?
I wish I did.
If you did, you could buy some probiotics.
Amen.
But you're looking for the range of about 25 to 50 billion a day. And a lot of times, you can take these any way you want, but I'm kind of fond of trying to take it at the end of the day on an empty stomach when I think it'll take the best.
And so, on an empty stomach?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be fine. I don't think you're going to have any upset tummy at all. But if you do this faithfully day in, day out, you're going to start to see a change in your body. And you're going to start getting the good microbes. You're going to start doing battle with the bad microbes. And, I mean, I don't even know of a person that I've ever seen that's had Crohn's or rheumatoid where we didn't have to do this.
Okay.
Every single case. The only one. And then I like acting surprised when they tell me they're better. I'm going, wow, I didn't think that would work. It's kind of a running joke at the office. But if you start taking probiotics, and the other thing that I really want to encourage you, or I know I might be hitting you just out of left field and you've never heard this before, but if you eat, and I can tell you over and over again, the cases I've seen completely reverse if we just avoid the foods that are triggering these bad reactions. And so if you eat currently lots of sugar, I know I'm an evil physician here, evil doctor.
I am.
I know. But you know what? You're a beautiful, beautiful human being. Look how honest you are in your voice. You're completely owning up to it. I'm not even trying to make you feel guilty at all, and you're just owning it. You're acknowledging your great sin.
I do eat way too much sugar. I do.
Well, that is a sin.
I know it is.
It may be a worse sin
like
than
it.
Others. Well, you know, personally, eating sugar could be worse than, say, bank robbery. But who's to say? Who am I to make that call? No, but sugar is going to cause all those toxic germs to grow inside of you, and plus it just generates a boatload of severe waste and inflammation. So what I want to talk you into is eating asparagus and coleslaw and salads and broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cauliflower, and eat ribeye steaks and fish, things like that. If you eat meat and vegetables, you will see all your fortunes change for the better.
Well, see, when I eat lettuce and corn like that, it hurts my colon and my...
Oh, I believe you, and I'm sorry about that. What we'll have to do is you'll have to make sure that for a while, for a short season, all your food's cooked. So, like, if you had broccoli, I'd probably just go ahead and boil it and make sure it's a little bit soft. I'm not saying that's perfect, but that's better than having a doubled-over pain and irritation in your gut, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to a Chinese food buffet and eat, you know, a 1 pound of raw broccoli? Are you kidding? I'll have to meet you in the ER after you do that. It'll be a disaster. Yeah, don't do that. So, yeah, cook it at first. Put butter on everything, coconut oil. Eat avocados. Avocados don't mess up your stomach, do they?
No, I love that.
Oh, boy, I found one thing she likes. All right, yay. And so if you'll start eating meat and vegetables, just make sure the vegetables are cooked. And so if salads bug you, just cut those out for the time being. But if we eat meat and vegetables, we're going to start starving out all those toxic germs and getting rid of all the horrible inflammation in your body. That's where maybe a paleo-style diet or a ketogenic diet. Do you live in the Tyler area?
Yes, sir.
You ever heard of Half Price Books?
No.
Well, there is
a store.
Well,
I live in Lindale, but, I mean, I grew up in...
Oh, you're a northerner. I get it.
Yes, sir.
Well, there's a relatively new open shopping center in Tyler over there by Academy called... Cumberland Villages. I think it's called Cumberland Villages for Roy. I don't know why they named it after me, but there's a book there called Half Price Books, and when I went there, I think it was maybe Monday this week with my sister, they had so many beautiful books on what to eat under the paleo category.
Okay.
And I can, you know what, the nice thing about this is you're a girl, which means you're a highly, highly visual creation of God. And so if you can see something and you can, you know, see a recipe and it looks really good, then you can probably make it.
Yes.
You are a visual person, aren't you?
Yes, I like to cook. So, yeah, I could do that.
Do you really? Man, this is working out better than I could have ever hoped for. This is great. This is like a gift from God. So, you've got to get rid of this chronic infection. You got to get rid of your food allergies. You got to clean up your body. It's gonna be wheat and corn. Those
wheat
are the big
corn.
Ones. Yeah. If you eat wheat, you ain't ever getting well from rheumatoid. I've only been doing this for 28 years, and, you know, so far I haven't had a person with rheumatoid or Crohn's be able to eat wheat and just do like $1 million and be fabulous all day long. It ain't going to happen. And I'm just going to suggest to you that eating wheat and corn are just going to generate so much inflammation. And plus, how do they make cows pack on the weight if you take them to a feedlot? Getting corn, yeah. Personally, if I go out in the woods, and let's just say I set up a game camera down by the creek, I mean, I can almost be borderline ridiculous with this stuff. I could say, I'm going to make it impossible for the hogs to find the corn, and so I'll take the biggest thicket of briars, brambles, sharp thorns. I mean, I would never go in there. And I'll throw corn, just a handful, in the briars or brambles and put a game camera on it. Guess what happens within hours? They plow through all these thistles to get to the corn. They can't resist it.
Mm-hmm.
My son Thomas, he says, Dad, can I jump across the creek? And I said, sure. You know, he's a boy. He's 5. He's supposed to do those things, right?
Yes.
And Molly Ann's right behind me. She's 8 at the time. And we had a little father-daughter-son picnic. They were the only ones that were willing to go, and it was kind of a windy day. And as soon as he says, Dad, can I jump across the creek, about 15 yards away, about 15 hogs start running across the creek toward us, and I'm going, oh, dear. And my daughter Molly Ann sees all the pigs, and one of the boars gives out this, you know, that's not a very good imitation, but he gives out like a, and it just terrifies her, and she's scared to death. And Thomas has his back turned to him, so he doesn't even know what's going on. And I'm going, hey, Tom, get over here now. And he's looking at me like, what's the big deal, Dad? I just jumped across the creek. Isn't that cool? I'm going, yeah, but right now I need you over here by me now. But anyway, we managed to get away from the hogs. But I tell you, the kids did not. They were just in shock that they were that. But there was a mama pig that had like about 3 little ones, and they were all kind of spotted black and white. And I thought, oh, this could be trouble if she thinks that we're too close to her little ones.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I think I just wasted your time.
No.
But
no,
if you just...
I listen
yes.
to you every Saturday, and I enjoy it.
Oh, well, you're just the most adorable human being of all time. Thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate those. But if you set your mind like Flint today that you're going to start drinking more water and more herbal teas and you're going to give up sugar, you're going to see your fortunes turn around, and you're not going to need that Humira, and this arthritis is going to disappear and go away. Now, there is a vitamin called vitamin K2.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think you should take some of that and see if a lot of that pain disappears in that big toe.
Okay.
But let me
and
know what
vitamin
happens.
Vitamin K2?
K2, yeah. I know there's a street drug called K2. I don't know anything about it. That is not what I'm talking about.
I've never heard of it, though.
Well, if you want to go in certain parts of Tyler tonight and there's some young lads, probably very industrious looking with their pants hanging down. Anyway, you haven't seen that before, have you?
No.
You haven't seen young men standing around street corners with their underwear showing and their pants down around their ankles?
No.
I don't even understand. I don't understand that. So they are probably not the ones to say, young man, would you have any K2 on you? Because my physician, Dr. Morgan, told me to acquire some. It ain't going to go well. I'll come bail you out of the pokey.
Okay.
All right, well, try those things and let me know how it works, okay?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, I'm going to read this to you right here. This is what I had in mind. This is from Dr. Charles A. Brush. or Bruch, and the name is spelled B-R-U-S-C-H. He's a medical doctor. And then this is his report. The results we obtained with thousands of patients of various races, sexes, and ages with all types of cancer. I don't know what the word all means, but I think it means all types of cancer. It definitely proves that SEAC to be a cure for cancer. Studies done in laboratories in the U.S. and Canada also fortify this claim. Now, I will admit these studies are probably from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. No drug company that I know of is testing an herbal tea that's cheap and non-toxic. They ain't doing that. This is what Dr. Bruch says. As a physician, it is one thing to say SEAC is a cure for cancer because you've seen it heal other people. It is quite another to believe in it so that when the disease finds its way into your own body, you are willing to abandon all other known conventional therapies in favor of SEAC. If you don't know what SEAC is, if you're just tuning in, that's an herbal treatment that you can get at any health food store. This is Dr. Bruch. During my last complete examination, where I was examined throughout the intestinal tract while hospitalized for a hernia problem, no sign of malignancy was found. Medical documents validate this. And I quote, I have taken SEAC every day since my diagnosis, and my recent examination has given me a clear bill of health. I remained a partner with Renee Cassie until her death in 1978, and was the only person who had her complete trust and to whom she confided her knowledge and know-how on what she named SEAC. Now, let me see. What's the other one? And I could not find the author on this one. So, yeah, I don't have that to you. Sorry. I can't give it to you. Sorry. All right. I'm trying to decide which one I want to read to you. Let me just go ahead and read this one to you. And this is an excerpt about SEAC tea calling. It's the title is Healing Leukemia with SEAC. For all I know, there may be one or two men listening to me right now that have great love for a person that has leukemia. And you know what? For all I know, there may be a certain man that I'm thinking of that I am just absolutely crazy about and that I trust. And maybe there's a diagnosis of leukemia. Here goes. My brother was diagnosed 1 year ago with very, very severe leukemia. His doctors immediately started him on chemotherapy. He had 2 full treatments of chemo, then a 3rd full treatment in a 4-week period. The chemo made him look deathly ill. My sister and I were appalled. He looked like death itself. His hair was gone, including his eyelashes. And this once vital large man of over 6 feet lay in his hospital bed in the fetal position, shaking from the chemotherapy. Oh, my word. The doctors in the oncology group told him he would die in the hospital if he stayed, or if he could go, or would he rather go home and die? My sister is a nurse, and she determined to save my brother. She knew of an herbal remedy for cancer called SEAC, and she asked the doctor to approve her bringing SEAC into the hospital to give to our brother. He cleared the way with the hospital authorities since he felt there was nothing else that he could do. My brother began taking SEAC and 10 drops of an herb called Podiarco each day, once in the morning and once in the eve. His blood count was at 4.8, which 10,000 is normal. Within 1 week of the SEAC treatment, he was not only alive, but his blood count was at 10.8. In 1 more week, his blood count was up to 14, 4,000 higher than normal. My brother had begun the SEAC treatment in August. After the SEAC treatments, and he monitored the monitoring of this dramatic rise in his blood count in 2 weeks, despite the destruction the chemotherapy had wrought earlier, the doctors let him go home. My brother was so healthy by January that he and his wife went on a 4-month cruise around the world, which I thought to myself, this is me, Roy, talking. How could he do that? I think the doctors today are all too know-it-all. That's not my words. I'm reading the article. They were far better in the olden days when they were family practitioners. They knew a lot about a lot then. Now they only know a little. The cancer doctors are so specialized that all they know is chemotherapy and cancer treatments. My brother today, which is August a year later, he looks wonderful. He is very healthy. He is active and robust, and he feels wonderful. He is planning another world cruise with his wife. I have to withhold my name because he and his wife do not want a lot of people calling about his experience, as neither they nor I wish to recall the terrible ordeal that we had with the chemotherapy. I love my brother very much. We are very close, and I just thank God for simple things like ESIAC and all the people all over the world who prayed for his recovery. And now I remember, that is the reason why their name is not given, because they chose to withhold it. If you would like to join me on the radio, we have time for another call. There's about 2 minutes left. That's enough time, hopefully. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Don't you think it's true that God has made everything for us, but sometimes we just don't know what to do? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. One quick question. Is it possible for gallbladder disease to be inherited?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is if, and you'll have to let me flesh it out just gently, if a grandparent kind of abused their body by eating wrong foods and a bad lifestyle and they consumed a lot of alcohol, then that's going to weaken the gallbladder and stress it. And if they pass on those traits to the daughter and down so, yeah, it's the same with diabetes or arthritis or heart disease. That's one of the reasons why God has given us choice. And if you turn it around, then you won't have to suffer those same maladies. But, yeah, you can inherit some weak areas. You sure do. Yeah.
Well, my parents didn't do that. Those things that not good for your body. My father was born in 1900. My mother in 1926.
So your father was born in 1900 and your mother in 26?
Yes.
Okay. I'm with you.
And
that means your mother's 91 right now or two.
No. She got in 2007.
Oh, I'm sorry for your loss.
Oh, well, it happens. It's part of life. Oh.
Well, she made it to 80.
Yeah. My dad made it to 86.
Wow.
And his sister, 109.
Oh, my word.
I'm going to make it to 110. But the reason I asked that question is because my mother had gallbladder surgery. My sister and her daughter and my daughter. So I've got granddaughters and great-granddaughters. And hopefully great-great.
Well, that's one of the reasons why you got to learn about the gallbladder. How can I keep it working well? And that's where the beet, the olive oil, the lemon juice, and the apple juice will really come in handy for them.
Okay. Well, my daughter has started doing things like that.
Well, I appreciate your phone call. We're officially all out of time, but I love you, and I appreciate your call, and thanks for listening to the station.
Thank you.